afternoon, and welcome to Tom Harris USA. I'm Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. Summer is finally here. Today is hot and humid, and this is more typical of the weather that we have at this time of year. We had a very cool and somewhat wet spring, and I think that finally we're back into a normal weather pattern for Chicago. And so now we can look forward to being damp and humid for the next couple of months, probably. The worst month here in Chicago during the summer is always August. That's always the most horrible, horrible weather that we have. Is the beginning of August is always the worst. I prefer the dead of winter, last week of January weather to what's coming. I'm not a hot weather person, and that's one of the reasons I don't live in Florida anymore. And it's not so much the heat as the humidity. It does all sorts of horrible things to my sinuses. I will probably start sounding even more nasal than normal. So that's just a preview of what you have to look forward to as we get into the deepest part of the summer here in Chicago. And with summer comes graduations. Well, I have the pleasure of announcing that my boyfriend Pete has officially graduated from culinary school and now has to enter the real world and look for a job. Well, you know, he had finished classes in March, and so this graduation ceremony was today, and I guess that's officially the end of childhood. So, congratulations to Pete, and hopefully he'll find something very soon. What else? Oh, well, I booked my ticket for the UK today. So I guess that means that no matter what happens with my job, the vacation is still on. And now officially so, because I can't get a refund or anything on the tickets. So I am going to the UK at the end of August, and I will probably end up missing some of the worst Chicago weather because I'll be in the UK experiencing their worst of their summer, which I always find to be very, very pleasant. And the plan right now is I will be in London for the first few days of my vacation. I'll be leaving here on the 14th. Of August and arriving in London on the 15th of August in the morning, and spend the weekend popping around London, and then meeting up with my best friend in London probably on Sunday. Then we are going to go on Monday or Tuesday, maybe Tuesday, because I've been thinking about stopping by Belushi's on Monday night for Chris Rudin's karaoke. But then we're going to take the train up to Newcastle and start the Hadrian's Wall path on Wednesday. So that'll be an interesting time, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm trying not to worry too much about things like whether or not I'm going to have a job. At this point, I'm ready for it to be resolved and not have to worry about it anymore. If I'm out of a job, I'm out of a job. And it is an irresponsible, perhaps, way of looking at it. But in my experience, sometimes the more irresponsible you are, the luckier you are. So that's coming up, and I'm looking forward to that. The other day had something interesting happen. I was accosted by a panhandler, and that doesn't happen real often where they become very aggressive. But it does happen periodically, and it's one of those things that I've struggled with over the years. And I grew up in a big city. So I was, you know, there were always panhandlers around. Not very many in the neighborhood I lived in. But when you'd go downtown, you'd go shopping or you'd go to a museum or whatever, there were always people around. And my mother would call them bums. But there are a lot of panhandlers in Chicago. And when I was working down in the Loop, I encountered them quite often, and I don't quite so often where I work now. When I work up in Evanston, which is only 3 miles north of where I live. I actually live closer to Evanston than I do to downtown Chicago. But I don't give money to panhandlers. And when I was living in Cleveland, when I encountered these panhandlers less frequently than I do now, I did allow myself to be guilted into giving them money. I don't anymore, and I'll tell you why. And it has nothing to do with being against the homeless or not feeling sympathy for them or feeling compassionate for them. On the contrary, I feel very compassionate towards the homeless people, people who've had a rough break. One of the things that has really gotten me to the point where I'm not giving any of them money anymore has to do with the fact that I live in Chicago. Now, Chicago has a huge number of resources for street people to turn to. There are shelters. There are organizations that run, you know, soup kitchens and so forth to feed them. And all of these things are subsidized by the city of Chicago and therefore are subsidized by my taxes. Now, there are other organizations that do these things too. They tend to be religious organizations or private charities. I don't give to religious organizations because I don't believe in the work they do and the harm they do. But there are other charities that are secular in nature that address these issues, and I do give money to these charities on occasion. So between my charitable donations and my taxes, I pay for the schools, which they may or may not have gone to, the prisons, where they may or may not have gone to, the shelters, whether they choose to utilize the shelters and the services or not. I pay for the social services, which help to get these people off drugs and booze and help them get off the streets. I pay for welfare. And, so when somebody comes up to me and demands money from me, what are they using it for? They have the services. They're there for them. Whether they choose to use them or not, I don't know, because I'm not going to take the time with each panhandler to discover the nuance of their story. And I'm sure they all do have stories. I am not one of those people who thinks that these panhandlers are on the street because they're lazy. I don't believe that at all. And that was something that my grandparents believed, and they were particularly hard on people who were black. I understand that it's the era that they were raised in was a racist era, and they were raised in rural Minnesota, which is not the most progressive of areas even today, much less back in the 19-teens and 1920s when they were growing up. The reason why I don't give money to the homeless is because it doesn't help them. It's much more effective to invest in the social services and the shelters and the things that the city provides for them. And I agree with those things. I am happy, delighted, to have a portion of my taxes to go to pay for these things. I think it's needed. I think it's important. And I'm all for that. But I am not going to give the homeless people extra money on top of that. And again, it's not because I don't feel compassion for them. It's because it doesn't help them. Ideally, what the goal is, of course, is to get these homeless people off the street and into homes and into jobs and into a better situation than the one they're in. If I give a panhandler money, that isn't going to do that. At the very most, it's going to provide them with a bottle of cheap booze or a pack of cigarettes. So on top of all the other things that I pay for with my taxes, you know, I'm not going to pay for their booze and their cigarettes too. It just doesn't make any sense to me. If people could come up with a better reason that I should be giving money to panhandlers, I hope you're right. I mean, you can contact me. It's very easy. HarrisPodcast@gmail.com. So when I do run across a more aggressive panhandler, the ones who really are demanding, it makes me feel even less inclined to give them money. We have had, and I used to ride the Red Line. The Red Line L is sort of the main north-south train that runs north-south through Chicagoland. It goes all the way from the far north side where I live, all the way through the far south side. And it ends not too far from the Indiana border. There are a lot of panhandlers on that train. Now, I don't see them now because I don't ride the Red Line like I used to. I used to ride it every day all the way downtown. But there would always be this one particular one. And he would go up and down the train and, you know, talk about how he was hungry and he wanted a little bit of money to buy food. People would be shamed into giving this guy money. Now, of course, panhandling on the train is completely illegal, and occasionally he would get caught and thrown off the train. But this guy, Mr. Homeless and Hungry is what I call him, because that was sort of the spiel he did. He had a script, and maybe not a written down script exactly, but he had a spiel that he would do. And I, on more than one occasion, after hearing this spiel, people would give him food. You know, they would have a sandwich, or they would have, lunch, or they would have, doggy bag from a restaurant. And they would give this to the guy, and he would thank them for it. You know, thank you, God bless you, etc. And on more than one occasion, I watched him, at the very next stop, take this, whatever they gave him, whatever food it was that they gave him, and throw it in the garbage. So this guy isn't wanting food. He's not hungry. I mean, if he were really hungry, then he wouldn't be throwing this away. He actually just wants the cash so he can buy, booze or drugs or cigarettes, something of that nature. So I don't want to seem like I'm unsympathetic. But I think that they really need, if they want to get off the street, they need to take the initiative. And I don't think panhandling is the way to do that. These people aren't taking this money you give them and putting them in a 401k. So I guess that's just my thoughts on that. And if anyone disagrees, I'd be happy to hear from you. This is something I'm certainly willing to discuss. I think that we should be a charitable society, and we should help the underadvantaged. But I don't think that handouts are the way to do it. I quite admired Bill Clinton, and I think that his idea of having to work to get welfare is a pretty good idea. Now, there's a lot of hard times in this country right now, and the country can't afford to support everybody. We don't have a nanny state, and we won't have one. As much as this works in other countries, it won't work in the U.S. because the U.S. people are pathologically opposed to paying for things. The whole idea of higher taxes has become such a huge bugaboo in American politics and in American society that, the services that people demand already are sometimes hard to pay for based on what people want. I think that in America, considering the services that people demand, the services that people want, we're undertaxed as a whole. And I think we really do get our money's worth out of the taxes. I mean, we have, the highway system, we have, all these other things that other countries really don't have to worry quite as much about. A Sweden-style or Finland-style nanny state wouldn't work here because we have too many other difficulties to overcome. For one thing, we're a large country as opposed to a place like Finland that has relatively small area and relatively few roads and things to maintain, and the infrastructure is smaller. You have more to spread around here. And that's why I don't think a nanny state, it wouldn't work. I mean, the taxes would be astronomical. But the high taxes aren't necessarily a bad thing if you get a lot of services for that. The problem, of course, here is that people just don't want to pay for anything. The people want a handout. They want something for nothing. And that won't fly here. Anyway, just a few thoughts. And if you disagree, or if you agree, feel free to contact me. It's harrispodcast@gmail.com. So lots of talk going on about the situation in Iran right now. And I find this all very, very interesting. And in a way, I find it all very, very reminiscent of what happened in 1989 and 1990, where the Soviet Union and the Soviet Union's satellite states gave up their form of government. It'll be really, really interesting to see if the Iranian people are angry enough about the election fraud, which undoubtedly has happened. See how far they're willing to go against this theocratic establishment that they have set up there. I don't watch the TV news, and I'm not parroting anything that I've heard or seen, because I really haven't been tuned into the mainstream media about this, because I really don't. I think TV news is the worst place you could possibly get news. I don't listen to the political talk shows, like Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or any of the right-wing talkers, and I really don't listen to the left-wing talkers either, like Rachel Maddow and people like that. But I've been reading articles lately about this, what's happening in Iran, and I think they finally overplayed their hand, and it could lead to serious consequences for the theocracy there, because they've got a schism, and there are people who are conservative religious Iranians who are now opposing this election result, which undoubtedly was the result of fraud. And the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, came out and said, how can you have a gap of 11 million votes? How can that be fraud? I mean, the answer, of course, is perfectly simple. You print millions of extra ballots and have them filled out to support the person you want. These aren't the votes of individual people. It's sort of whatever votes don't go for the opposition go for the people who printed the ballots. And it's obvious what happened now. And the problem that the Iranian theocracy now faces is how to justify this fraud in the face of the public. People who up until now have had a pretty solid support of this theocratic system are now starting to turn against it. And that's what happens when these politicians, in this case, have become so addicted to having authority that they're going to go to any measure they can to not give it up. And the people didn't just go along with it this time. So no matter what happens, I think that the picture in Iran is going to be very different now. It's not going to be a monumental block of control that these religious conservatives have over their society now. It's going to be, they're going to have to step a lot more carefully if the regime survives. And I think the regime will survive. I don't see the will, in what I've read so far, of the Iranian people to overthrow the Council of Guardians. Now, for those who don't know, Iran is a theocracy, which is controlled by they have a supreme leader, in this case Ali Khamenei, and they're a council of 12 religious leaders, which is known as the Council of Guardians. Now, they are the ultimate authority, and below them is the secular elected government. Well, I wouldn't say secular necessarily, but the elected government Ahmadinejad, etc. And those are people that are chosen by the populace as opposed to the religious leaders, which are not. So I don't see a lot of will on the part of the Iranians so far to overthrow the theocracy as they are to expunge the elected government of the people who have perpetuated this fraud. And just to put it into context, what happened was that there was a massive fraud on the part of the Ahmadinejad government. It would be the equivalent of in November of 2008 if you had had Illinois go 60-30 in favor of McCain, despite all the polling that are showing that it was 60-30 the other way. Now, granted, in Iran they don't have the same kind of political polling and so forth as we have here. They're not obsessive about it as we are here. So it's a little bit easier to pull one over, or I should say it's easier for the government to pull one over on the people than it is here, because here everything is scrutinized. We don't trust anybody anymore. And you can to some extent thank the Bush administration for that, because of all the lies and the election frauds that happened in 2000. So I'm watching this with great interest, and I'm hoping that there will be some sense of sanity restored to Iran. I would love to see the theocracy overthrown, because I obviously, as an atheist, as a rationalist, I am against the notion of religious leaders running anything. They can run their own churches, they can run their own religion, but having secular authority over the lives of people in their country, I think is a very, very bad idea. And of course that puts me at odds with people like, you know, the late Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, and that ilk. They would have loved to see a theocracy in America. But this is exactly the demonstration of why a theocracy doesn't always work. And theocracies, generally speaking, don't. Anytime you get a situation like this, it's always a very complex one. And so I'm watching this very, very carefully, and I'm hopeful that the Iranians can achieve true freedom and have a true democracy, as opposed to this religiously based government. And a warning to other regimes who would impose a religious veneer over their society. You know, you can't get away with it. I mean, that should be the lesson. You can't get away with lying to your people, even if you do so in the name of your God. Speaking of lying for God, I kind of wonder what Kent Hovind thinks of all this. For those of you who don't know, Kent Hovind is one of these young earth creationists, and he operates a website and various things. He goes around the country, quote unquote, debating people who are scientists who are defending evolution. One of Kent Hovind's main arguments is that evolution, the teaching of evolution, or Darwinism as he calls it, is the cause of tyranny and Nazism and communism and abortion and all these other things. Absolute nonsense. The man is a complete and utter idiot. But and he's in prison now. this superior moral person has ended up in jail for not paying his taxes. Naughty, naughty Kent Hovind. But it's interesting because despite the fact that this is often brought up, that Darwinism, etc., leads to tyranny, how would he explain the tyranny in Iran? I mean, that's not based on Darwinism. That's based on religion. It's based on religious faith. As so often happens when you have, you know, any extreme form of belief gets in charge, you end up with a tyranny. They have to, because the more extreme your rulers are as far as their beliefs, whether it be North Korea or the Soviet Union or Iran or even, you know, to some extent in the U.S., you can't keep everybody happy, because you're so far on the fringes that you cannot keep your support, your base of support, unless you adopt more draconian measures like the Patriot Act or, you know, extreme gun control laws and that sort of thing. It really does, you know, kind of disprove this notion that tyranny is something that's caused by, you know, teaching evolution in public school. So I'd be very interested to hear what Kent Hovind thinks about the situation in Iran. On the other hand, maybe I'm not really interested, because he doesn't have a lot of intelligent things to say. But I was watching one of his debates this morning, in fact, on YouTube, and there's a lot out there available. It's so amazing to me, and I know that this creation evolution thing I'll be coming back to periodically on the show, that the creationists really don't have anything to offer. Their entire argument is based on pointing out things in evolutionary science that they can't explain. And they point to that and say, well, ha, you can't explain that, therefore God did it. Most ridiculous thing. And their arguments are very, very poor. You know who's really funny? And it's Kirk Cameron, former child star who has become a kind of a celebrity among the evangelical right. Just amazingly stupid arguments that they make. I saw a video, and again, this was probably on YouTube, where they are saying that they're trying to prove creation by pointing to the banana. And they have a banana there, and it's like your standard garden variety Dole banana. And trying to explain all the different ways by which this shows God's perfect plan and his perfect creation. The banana is perfectly shaped to fit the human hand, and it has a pull tab on it, and so forth. Completely ignoring the fact that these modern bananas are not the result of nature. They were created by man. Kind of a clone, actually. And these bananas that are found in nature don't resemble those bananas in any way, shape, or form. And how could they not know that? Well, they don't know that because they don't actually look at any of the science. I mean, the science would utterly disprove their point. So I find this stuff very amusing, and I would strongly encourage anybody to go onto YouTube and watch some of these creationist videos. And the debates, because it's so easy to debunk their arguments. They really don't have any scientific arguments. Their entire strategy is to try to knock down scientific evidence by dismissing it. Most of the time, though, they misinterpret evolution because they don't really understand evolution or how it works. So they'll set up a straw man saying, well, evolution claims that things get bigger and more powerful as you go, and that isn't what evolution teaches. And a lot of their arguments are of a similarly poorly thought out line of reasoning. So it's just funny. And then, back when I was a Christian, I was actually kind of parroting this stuff myself. And now that I've actually been educated a little bit about it and have looked into the science, I can't believe how stupid I was. But that that is the nature of the beast. It's a self-perpetuating stupidity, and they go around supporting each other by using each other's books as references and so forth. It's exactly the same thing. It's exactly the same thing that I was talking about when I was talking about the psychics and their earth changes. They'll take the similar arguments from each other's books and use each other as references to come up with the same conclusions. It's the same for all pseudoscience. Because they don't actually have scientific evidence of their own. They don't actually do science. Creationists have never done a bit of science. And if they had, then they would probably be trumpeting it all over the place. Great discovery by creationists, to support creation. They don't do anything like that because they don't have any evidence to support. So that's a topic for another day, because I see that we're kind of getting short on time here. So with that, I'm going to wrap up the show probably a little bit early. Oh, don't forget, I have a show on tarot coming up. I probably will be doing that on the next show or the show after. So if you are interested in having your cards read on the air, drop me a line on my Gmail account, which is harrispodcast@gmail.com. Or you can email me at tom@tomharrisusa.com and let me know. Let me know who you are and the area of concern you have in your life that you would like the cards to address. And I will read your cards on the show. And you can let me know how accurate the reading was. There's no need to actually appear on the show if you don't want to. If you do want to, then I'll have to figure out how to do that. I'm sure it's not that bad. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. So until next time, this is Tom Harris at Tom Harris USA. Have a good evening.